Hello, everyone. Hello, Mohit.
Hey, how's it going?
Going great. It's a beautiful Friday here. I hope your Friday was great or is going on great. So we just started. We're gonna be waiting for Matt to see if he comes up. And also, Mohit, please. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing good.
Awesome. Me too. I see Hamid here too. Hello, Hamid. Hello, Matt. How is your Friday?
Hello, how are you all?
Doing great. Busy Friday here.
Yeah, me too. We've had a deep work week, so not a lot of meetings, but just busy getting a lot done. Are you here with us, Mohit? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Could you hear me?
Yep. Awesome. How
Great.
are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, very also busy Friday for me.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be here with us.
Yeah, no problem.
Also, good thing we always record our spaces. So if anybody misses them, we can always link them to our website. Is it website, Matt?
Yeah, pretty much. We have a website, also a podcast stream if you would rather get it via some like RSS feed or something.
Nice. So Mohit, would you want us get started by introductions?
Sure. My name is Mohit. I'm an Android engineer. I'm a GDE and Kotlin expert on Android and Kotlin. I've given a few talks before, so what I'll share today is different things about how talks are reviewed, like in conferences, and how different processes, like on, and if you want to give a talk, like how do you go about, outlining it, different approaches you could take, and I'll share. That's what I'll talk about today. It's great to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here. Want to say I met Matt in person finally. He's very tall in person. It's great to meet you at DroidCon stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was great to see you speak there as well. And yeah, you have done a ton of talks. And something I'm really interested to learn about today as well is how the process works behind the scenes to get a talk accepted and what that looks like from the reviewer's side. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for everyone who's here today to listen to us on a Friday. And Madonna, you want to kick us off?
Yes, and I'll just start by asking Mohit, tell us the process. How is it actually? And before we even start, I just want to like applaud you for all you do for the community. It's pretty cool. I also love your blog. I kind of read a lot of it, and I've actually, funny enough, I googled some stuff and then I found your articles too, and they've helped me a lot. So kudos on the community work.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I want to say before I share, on talks reviewed, want to welcome Muhammad to see he was a speaker also. If anyone wants to, interject, with more information, please feel free. I'm part of the committee at DroidCon NYC. Been part of the committee of Android Worldwide. So I'll share my experience on how talks are reviewed for like conferences. It's different from meetups because in meetups, no one reviews, it's only the organizer that reviews your talks. Is much easier to give, start off at meetups. So in conferences, usually we use a tool called Sessionize. Not every conference uses that tool, but it's that tool is Sessionize is very popular where you submit your talks. So before, there's a committee that gets organized, and it's important to have, on the committee, diverse backgrounds because you want to have like not just technical people because you're gonna have submissions on a wide array of topics. So the committee, the way talks are reviewed is that in the evaluation, you start off by looking at three talks, in batches. You're presented with three talks and you rank them for one, two, and three. And important to understand is that when someone is evaluating your talk, it could be ranked against a talk of a different topic. So it's not organized like with the same topics. It could be like, you know, it's random, it could be different. And when someone evaluates your talk, they could be designated as a top session. Like, you know, this is a really, really good topic. It could be categorized as does not fit. That means that, like, you know, this topic maybe is not aligned to this conference, or it could be like ignored. That means that it could be that the person doesn't have enough background to be able to evaluate it. And ignore really means, doesn't really mean that your talk is just completely ignored. It just means that it will be evaluated like for another reviewer, you know, another reviewer it will be handed off to. So that's the basic process of, you know, those talks are evaluated. So there are important things to understand about that. And why that's important to understand is that you want to put yourself in the position of who's going to be hearing your talk, be reviewed, so that it helps you to be able to better construct title, talk titles, and abstracts. So most important thing, I guess, to take away is in this, you know, the Twitter space is, you know, one thing that was is important point is that it takes about an average of 30 seconds for a person to review. I found each talk, each submission, and that's not a lot of time. You know, you think about that. And if you have fewer talks that you're submitting, it usually takes about 17 seconds to review each submission. And there are a lot of submissions that get categorized into does not fit or ignore or top session. So I want to stop there. Any questions or, you know, anyone on that process? That's the process used by many, many, many different conferences with Sessionize.
Actually, that's a very good point you brought up, because I also joined the Joint Code Committee in New York, which is fun. Yeah. And now I get to review like many talks too.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I noticed was that comparison. And to me, having used Monday, because I do like review for Women Who Code a lot, and we use Monday. And the way Monday works is that people submit their talks, and then we just give them like based on the categories. For instance, if you said your talk was going to be on cloud or on mobile, Android specific, iOS, so they are ranked in that way. And then there we don't even see anybody's name. We just go and like take like, look, this talk is pretty good based on the title and abstract. And then we vote. So if many people vote you on your talk, I think that's how you get notified. So for me, what I look for in a talk mostly in these days that I've realized is like, because one of the challenges, actually, Mohit, you can speak to this, was we had so many talks on Jetpack Compose, all of them very amazing. But I wondered, how do you rank which one is the best? So maybe that's the question I have for you, Mohit. Like, when you get so many talks like that, like, I think we had more than... there's so many, like, how do you know which one is the best? So now, like, how do you evaluate? I would like to learn from you.
Yeah, that's always difficult. as you said, it's interesting that you shared that platform. What was the name again? Is it called Monday?
Yeah, Monday. Yeah. Women Who Code uses Monday, which is pretty interesting, because the way Monday ranks the talks is that the talks come, we don't even see anybody's name. They just come in there, and then you just read the title and abstract, and then you just give them like points. Let's say 5 points or 4 points or 3 or 1 being, no, let's not get the talk. Yeah.
To answer your question on, you know, how evaluating talks and best practices of constructing your abstract. So one of the things that I recommend is that, you know, the one, not something that I see a lot in submissions is you don't be concise. You don't write 5 paragraph essays. Yeah, your abstract is one, because you think about it, a person is spending about an average of 30 seconds, then very few people are going to read the whole app, the whole five paragraphs. It's, you want to keep it to a minimum of about one paragraph. You know, you don't want, it's not you're talking there. And when I look at, you know, good abstracts, they all have a similar structure, and they all have like a beginning, middle, and an end. In the beginning of, you know, good abstract, the beginning gives, you know, what problem will your talk be about? Provides some background and context into the topic. And then the middle is the meat of your abstract, which is what topics will you be talking about? And it is not, it's not like going in depth. You want to say that in a few brief sentences. And the last sentence is what the user will take away. So, like, give you an example. Like, for example, like Adam is, you know, a good friend. He's also very active in the community and gives a lot of talks. And he, when you look at his CFPs, he, you know, follows that structure. And that really makes it easier for someone to review your talk, to know what it's about, and to following that format. Like, you have keep it about one paragraph, you know, or one paragraph and one in sentence at the end. Like, be with the beginning, middle, and an end. Like, beginning is what problem are you going to address in your talk, and the middle is going to be about what topics, you know, your talk will be about. Like, what will you talk about, the meat of it. And then the last sentence is that, like, what will the speaker take away from after listening to your talk. Like, and that's a good structure I found to follow that I see in lots of abstracts. Matt, yeah.
Yes. So this is all awesome. I think we're maybe getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, because when I first, you know, wanted to start getting into writing conference submissions and stuff like that, you know, people are like, oh, you know, make sure you write an abstract. But maybe we can take a step back. And one, just hello, all these new listeners. Thanks for joining us today. We are talking with Mohit, who has submitted many conference talks and given many conference talks, and he's just kind of giving us the rundown on that whole process and what it looks like. And I think it'd be really helpful to take a step back and kind of talk about the anatomy of a submission. So we've talked a little bit about how it happens and how reviewers look at what the submission is, but what does an actual submission consist of? Like, how much information do you need to have? Do you need to have, you know, all your slides done? Is it just this abstract? What is an abstract specifically? And then maybe we can retouch on, like, how to structure some of these things so that they are easy for the reviewers to digest. So yeah, like, what does a submission look like? For, like, if you were to submit to a conference, what would you need to have done?
So everyone takes different approaches on, you know, writing the abstract out, getting to that point. And I'll share, there's no right or wrong. It depends on what feels comfortable to you. You should try a different thing. So I'll share my process. I usually don't start off by just writing an abstract. I take more of a bottom-up approach, which is create a Google Doc, and then in which I have an idea of a topic I may want to talk about. For example, suppose I want to talk about unit testing with coroutines. Suppose that. So when you think about that, it's a broad topic. There are many things that go into testing. And I start off with this outlining, like, and what I'm trying to outline is, like, different things. For example, I could outline, like, you know, how do you test flows? That's one section. How do you test delays? That's another section. And what I'm doing as I'm outlining is looking at the order in which, you know, of things that fit together. And, you know, when you talk about testing, for example, does a person need some background on it that I should talk about earlier in the beginning? So it's then from there, you know, so you could you know, when you're outlining, you may not know everything about a certain topic. So certain sections, like, you may need to do research. And that's part of, you know, the outlining process, going in and doing research. And then basically when I look at that outline, then I go ahead and, you know, write. I have enough info. I write. I have my beginning, middle, and an end of, I have an idea what's going to be the beginning, middle, and end of my talk. And then I go in and write an abstract. So that's more of a bottom-up approach that I personally take, but you could also take, you could also take the top-down approach where you start off with some abstract, and then you may have to do some research in it and go back and look at your abstract to refine it more. So I personally have been using this bottom-up approach of starting with an outline and then moving upward to an abstract, and basically, yeah. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, that's awesome. So for anyone who might not know what an abstract is, could you explain what exactly it is? Like, it seems like, you know, this short much, beginning, middle, yeah. End. Yeah, go ahead.
Very much a summary of, it's a brief summary of what your talk is going to be about. What will the person who's going to attend your talk take away from it? And what problem are you talking about? For example, you may have a talk, you're talking about a solution to a specific problem. Maybe like, how do you use Compose like, for example, how to like migrating to Compose, for example, like you may have migrated in your company, Compose. And in your talk, you would say, you know, you could say that, you know, I'm going to talk about the processes that I took to evangelize Compose. And this will be helpful to you because, you know, it will help. You could apply some of those techniques to your own company in terms of where you are. So it's a brief summary of basically, you know, what the attendee of your talk will take away, you know, from what topics briefly that you'll be sharing in your talk.
Awesome. And so when you're submitting, do you only need this abstract, or do you need to have like this outline that you brought up? Do you need to have slides like prepared, or like what you think you want that to be like, if I were to submit a talk,
yeah,
what should I send it?
So you start off with an abstract, you know, if your talk accepted, I never been in a position where I, you know, had the slides much earlier than before my submission. It's been basically, I had some idea, you know, and I researched it. And when my talk is submitted, you know, I start my slides. A lot of people, like, it's common is we, you know, procrastination is a challenge where you don't want to do your slides 1 week before you want to. I found it's much better to, you know, progress to do 10% every day, basically, of creating your slides, because you don't want to get in the position of doing it during the weekend before it, because you want to practice. So after you submit your abstract, that's when you want to, you know, start putting together your slides. And something that helps is that, something I want to bring up is that writing blog posts, you know, if you have already written a blog post around certain topics, and that really helps in constructing the abstract and constructing the slides. And so and someone like Adam, for example, in the speaker, he does, I remember he tweeted about that. So he does that. He follows that technique. And I also follow that. That helps me a lot to construct the slides.
Awesome. But you don't need the slides to submit. You really just need this abstract for people to get the gist of
an idea
you're,
yeah,
going to be talking about. And yeah, that has to be what gets people interested enough to add your talk,
yeah,
to the conference. Awesome. Cool. Thanks for breaking that down.
Yeah. I wanted to just share some more best practices when you're constructing your abstract, things I found. Most important, constructing your title, you know. Don't use acronyms that not everyone will understand. When people are evaluating talk, you think about it, it takes an average of 30 seconds. So when don't use acronyms in titles that people, not everyone will understand. So you want, your title is very important, and you want it to be engaging, you know, something that just helps you, the reviewer, understand, like, or in the attendee, what your talk is going to be about. So the titles are important. And another thing about abstracts is a lot of submissions I see, like, don't write, you know, one sentence abstracts or two sentence abstracts. They usually get categorized as does not fit. I found it's, you want the language in your abstract to not be very academic. Be wary. You want it to be very, like, semi-formal, like, very fluid, easy to understand. And I recommend you could use Grammarly or Hemingway Editor, that, you know, when you, that you write in there using those tools, it gives you, tells you how readable it is, whether you're using passive voice. Also does spell checks, do spell checks in your, because it looks good in your title and your abstracts. So you want your abstract to be very, very much simple to understand to the reviewer and to the attendee. Well, those are some, you might be surprised. There are a lot of submissions where that are long and also on the other side, very, very short.
Awesome. I definitely want to touch on titles again, but before we do that, I want to jump over to Harsh. Thank you for being so patient, and thanks for coming up and having a question. So what's up?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Hello, everyone. And I'm currently learning Android development, and I find it kind of overwhelming how fast Android development is changing as compared to it was a few years ago. Like, I started 2 or 3 months ago, and I followed some resources on Udacity, where Google provides a few free courses on about how to develop Android apps. And when I follow those tutorials and try to build my own project, I find many libraries were deprecated or something changed drastically that I couldn't follow up with them. So how you all tackle all these fast changing, or I can rather frame it like, how you all keep up with the fast changing Android development library?
So if I understand the question, it's how do we keep up with multiple changing dependencies in Android libraries and just the fast nature of the changing of technology in the Android ecosystem?
Yeah.
Sure. Mohit, do you have any tips for us?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for your question. It's nice to virtually meet you. So you first, you don't have to keep up with everything. It's hard, but that's a good understanding to have first in the beginning. So because it can be very overwhelming. So some things that I would recommend is having an app, build an app, and that where you could try out different things. So, like, for example, someone that I know in the community, like his name is Zach Sweers. He has an app called Ketchup, you know, in which he tries out in different branches, different types of things may be composed. Well, look, another good example in the community, like Adam, he also has, if you look at his GitHub repo, many different apps where he builds sample apps to try out different things. And that's very helpful, gives you, and the app doesn't have to be complicated. It could be an app that displays, like, a lot of people build an app on Pokedex. Some people build an app that displays a list of to-dos, and that's a good starting point. You know, have an app like that where you try different things. So always another thing to keep up with new things is that I always follow, read Kotlin Weekly and Android Weekly, And they saw lots of good articles in there, lots of Medium articles in there that are good to read, that help you to get an idea of different things that are coming out. Another thing is like, you know, contributing to open source projects. That's something very helpful. You know, those are some of my tips. Anyone else have any more tips?
Yeah.
Thanks much. Also, I was asking that, where do you all get the overview of what to search for some features? Like if I want to, it's obvious that no one is going to know all the libraries available in Android development. So how you all get the overview of what to search on Stack Overflow or Google developers to get really what you want?
I would just look for what you want when you need it. So like if you have a problem, so, you know, say it's either image loading or networking or something like that, like look up a solution that you need, like see what other resources are doing. Resources meaning like some of the things Mohi called out, like open source library, like projects that other people use. You can see how they handle some things. It's really just like something that you'll work into a workflow of being aware of in the ecosystem when people, you know, contribute to these things and post public code that you can poke through.
So the key here is to learn from others' code.
Yeah, either that or blog posts, or there's all sorts of ways, like whatever is good for you. I know there's a bunch of Android developer YouTube videos or channels. Like they put out a thing, it's called Now in Android. It goes over like a bunch of commonly used tools and practices.
Something I'll add is that just to tie it into giving talks. Giving talks is a good way to learn. So you don't have to be an expert in the topic you're talking about. You could use this as an opportunity to learn. A good thing that helped me to get good when I started giving talks, I gave a lot of talks at meetups on topics that I wanted to learn more about. So I'll do a lot of research, and then I would, construct my talk. So I used it as a medium to help me to help me to stay on top of different things that are coming out. So I recommend that too. Like at meetups, like giving talks, maybe you want to learn about Compose, and it helps you to learn when you are able to explain it to someone else, you know, about a concept or a topic. So I recommend that too.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And that's all I wanted to ask. And it's really great to see Androiders hang out like this. And it's really my first time joining a space where Android developers are talking. And it's really kind of good to ask directly from the persons who already knew this stuff. So thanks for letting me speak.
Yeah, thanks for coming up and asking a question and joining us today. We really appreciate it. One last point, though, for your question. Don't be afraid to reach out to communities, whether it's through like the Kotlin Lang Slack or on Twitter. And there's an Android developer Twitter that I think Madonna is a admin of. Reach out there, ask some questions. Usually someone will either point you in the right direction, or if you just hang out there, then maybe you'll just passively find what you're looking for as well. So yeah, thanks for coming up.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
But that's a very good point. I will just share the community here on the space. If you want to join or if you want to request to join, I will just approve you. But yeah, I see people asking questions there and then getting answers. So it's a great community and I'm very appreciative. Thank you.
That will be great, Madonna. Very helpful of you. Thank you.
So I wanted to share just on, there is a, as you shared, there is an Android study group, Slack, which is very, very helpful to be on top of things, so be part of discussions. There is a nomination process there, so you could reach out to a lot of people here are part of that. You could reach out to someone to be nominated. But Kotlin Slack Lang is, you know, it's that that's, you know, there's no nomination process there. So you could easily be part of that. So I recommend just those two Slack communities. There are also Slack communities for like specific things. For example, if you want to learn about like Square workflow, that's a library to architect using the workflow library. There's also a Slack community. You'll find in the link in the GitHub repo that you could join and be part of.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks again for joining us. You are as much a part of this as we are. So thanks to everyone who is listening and asking questions. We really, really appreciate it. And we are so happy that you are here with us on a Friday. And now over to Chand. I hope I pronounced that right. If not, please let me know. But thanks for coming up. And I hope you're having a great day. What's your question?
Hello. Hey, hello.
Hello, can you hear us?
Hey everyone, am I audible? I think my internet is not good here.
We can hear you now.
Hi Madonna, hi Matt, hi Mohit. So my questions regarding to the foreground services. So recently in our projects, what we are trying to build is that we have our foreground services, and in our applications, so we have like driver applications, same like Uber. So that runs about 8 to 9 hours a day, which try to fetch a location from a user and trying to send those locations to our server. So what I'm currently facing is that, so service is on, but it is not able to pull the current location from out of it. So I don't know, I've tried many solutions from Google and all of that. So none of them is still, you know, try to fix my problem. So what I'm trying to do is in my services. So I'm taking the locations and then I'm sending to the Firebase. So I don't know if I'm asking the right questions, or maybe if you can put some light on this, like what is the exact way to, you know, face the location in foreground services, and so that I will not miss out any location while my service is up. I hope you get my questions.
I understand your question, but I'm not sure I can help you with an answer, unless maybe Madonna or Mohit have done some work with location.
I think what I would ask is, do you have like a question written down well, like maybe on Stack Overflow or anywhere, so we can just read it, like when we get time?
No, actually, I haven't asked on this Stack Overflow yet. But I'm gonna ask on this on Slack or Stack Overflow or in Google's as well. So I'll give the all details that what we are trying to do and how we are fetching the location, so that you guys can help me out in that. So
yeah, I think that would be much helpful, because I think I've seen people in the community do the same, like write some questions and then post them on Stack Overflow and then just share the link there. And then they get some help. Or you can just write a description and then maybe show the error you're getting. I've seen that also in the community. I've shared the community here. Like when you see the top of the chat, you'll see there we have a community. Just request to join there if you're not in the community, and I'll add you. And then you can ask any question you have.
I'm not able to see any. Could you please? So, okay. Is it Android developer, right?
Yes. It's the Android developer community, yeah.
Yes, I've requested you.
Can you see it?
Yeah, I have requested
perfect.
You.
Perfect. I'll approve you, and then you can just write down and then ask the question.
Thank you so much.
Madonna, I also just requested there. So please, you can have a if you can have a look at there.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm looking at
another questions I have is that, so right now in all current days, we are seeing Jetpack Compose is getting, you know, loved by community a lot. So since we are working on our application which are built on coroutines and Android part, so what's your opinion on that, how we can, you know, shift from example part to the Jetpack Compose? It is really a right time to do it, or should we wait a little more time? I mean, because I'm kind of into FOMO right now. A lot of my friends, friends are migrating the XAML into Jetpack Compose. So should we really wait for some time, or should just start adopting Jetpack Compose?
I can answer this too, but then, sorry, Matt. I think one thing that I've learned from the community is that people actually trying to have them in their production app. One of our talk, actually, I think she's called Dinara. She pioneered like having Jetpack Compose in our company like for 6 weeks. And she talks through it like in a blog. So definitely please make sure you follow her and just see how they did it. And I'll also ping her just to share the resources, and then I can retweet them so that you can see them. And also I would say many companies actually, they are into Jetpack Compose. Like Twitter is definitely using it. And just, I know this might be wrong, but I think new features definitely you can try to use Jetpack Compose with. But let me hear from Matt and Mohit on this too.
Yeah, I recommend those resources you shared. I also worked on helping with migrating to Jetpack Compose in an app. I just have a follow-up question for Chan, just for you. How big is your team? And in terms of your current setup, what is the knowledge of Jetpack Compose like?
Yeah, so that's it. Good question. So Mohit, so we are into startups, very small startups called Blue Smart in India. So we are electric vehicles company. So if I talk about the team specifically for the Android, so we are about 7 people who are managing the ride hailing applications for the customer and the driver end application for the customer. So we are about team of 6 people who are managing those 2 applications, and we have a user base around 2-3 lakhs user base right now. And we have a lot of feature going on, and in parallel we have some optimizations. And like I share with you that we are facing this location problem on the driver app side. So along with that, when I open Twitter or see LinkedIn, everybody like posting that we are migrating into Jetpack Compose and so many benefits, less code, more server driven UI. So that make me think that should we start adopting or should we wait? I mean, we are into some kind of deciding factor that whether we should start adopting it or we should wait. I mean, so we are about very small team in the Android part who are managing 2 applications primarily.
So it looks like it depends on how much do you have on your plate and what are your priorities are. You have to think about a lot of things when you introduce Compose, like in the team that you have, how will you onboard or train people to use Compose if they were to start building features, right? People would need some ideas about like what are the layouts Compose provides. Right, they will need a crash course, and you also have to think about like in your app. You said like you have this location problem, and then you have what are the right areas to introduce Compose in? Yeah, you want to recommend. If you do use Compose, try it out in something very simple and not something that has not your high risk features, the lowest risk features. And I would say that it's a process. I recommend having, getting training on, doing the good thing is there are so many code labs now on that Google provides, and then starting off with those, that gives you a nice background, like together as a team, set up a meeting, like, compose a day where, 1 hour you all get together and build something, compose, you start off with that. And then just start building on from there, coming up with patterns on, in Compose, there is an idea of scaffolding layouts. And as you start to add Compose in different areas of the app, you can come up with these usable components. So introducing Compose, it's a process, and I would recommend taking baby steps. Just start with the code labs, look at, get everyone up to speed on the different layouts and Compose, the basics of it, and then start with something simple. And then take it from there, you know. That's my suggestion.
Sure. Thanks. Awesome. Thanks, Mohit. Yeah. So that's all from my
side. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for joining us. The only thing I would add is, since it is like mostly interoperable, you can add it, you know, as you go along and just maybe make new screens or something in Compose and just keep building on it. But I would like to get back to the conference talks and paper submissions topic if we can, but still really appreciate your question and coming up and joining us today. And I do have a question that I got in DMs for Mohit, if you are ready. And it is from someone who was recently a part of a committee for evaluation on proposals. And he noticed that the profile of the submitter is on the same page as the three talks. And the person's profile is their job title, etc. Does this ever contribute to how a talk is perceived? And do you have any opinions on what that is or if it can be improved at all?
Yeah, so that's what I found on Sessionize, that when I am able to see the who submitted it, their profile. I mean, that opens up maybe for some bias. I don't know is on Sessionize if it's possible to hide that, but Madonna, like, she was sharing a tool Monday, and which has a feature where, you know, it's anonymous. You don't see the submitter. So, you know, it really is the trust that you have in the people who are reviewing it, that, you know, you want to evaluate the abstract, the content, you know, no matter, you know, who submitted, who submitted it. That shouldn't be it should be about your abstract, your content and your title. And then like how strong it is. So, Madonna, do you have any more to add in there?
Sorry, my son was crying.
Sorry.
It's okay. So I think that's a good point. And to me, I feel like it's more about the trust. And like I said, talks are going to be submitted by so many superstars, but mostly it's going to be, does that talk like reach out to me individually or to the community in general? So I have seen actually some misleading like abstracts, because like when you read the abstract and then you're like, oh, and then there's more details down and then the topic is totally different. And I was like, wait, maybe somebody confused it. But I do really want to say I love Monday. For some reason, I've been using Monday more and I love it because it's anonymous. Nobody knows anybody. And then you just vote based on who's the best. However, if you submit your own talk, which is something that I'm wondering now, I don't know how you get to vote for yourself if you're in part of the committee. But again, it's about trust. I think I would say that.
So good. I mean, that's a good point. So good practice. If you're on the committee, you see your own talk, as to just mark it and Sessionize as ignore. And yeah, so that's a good practice to mark it as ignore.
Yeah, because I did see. So when you're evaluating yourself, so for Monday, if you submit your own talk, I mean, nobody's going to know it's your talk. Even the people evaluating you, they won't know it's yours. So there's a higher possibility you might not get selected, which is pretty cool. But I think for Sessionize, I think people will see your face, which is different. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I really love that this was asked. And, you know, even if there is that trust, there's still that, you know, potential unknown bias that we all deal with. And not having the talk or not having the profile there could really help with that. So maybe we can reach out to some people or figure that out. But it's a really, really interesting consideration that I did not know about.
Yes. And in fact, when I got the Sessionize, I was just asking my friend, she's not here, Sierra, I was asking her, wait, I get to see people here? That's the first thing I told her, because I was like, wait, I've always used the anonymous one because it's much easier, because I'm like, okay, I don't know anybody here, so this talk can't be. But on the others, I'm like, oh, wait, maybe this is why I got rejected. Just me.
Wow. I mean, I hope not. awesome. Thanks for that question. And I do have another one. And this one is kind of about the tools that you use, Mohit. So when you are crafting a talk, how do you do that? Like, what tools do you use to stay organized? Where do you go for research? All that great stuff.
Yeah. So I use Trello. I make a Trello board. I don't know. I use a Trello board. I make a Trello board for each talk, and then I divide, like, each section of my talk is a, I make a, so Trello is normally used for, you know, make product development, and I try to transfer that into creating talks. So each lane in the Trello board represents, you know, things you need to do, you know. Maybe research, or maybe like writing a blog post on a subtopic. So I take my outline and I divide it each section into different Trello cards, and then I work on it, like progress through working on it. Now that I don't know that might sound crazy, but I got that idea from someone else in the community, and I tried it out, so, and I really liked it. Helped me to stay organized. Basically, it is, but it has a double-edged sword. It is a lot of work. Giving a talk and it does require an investment on your side. So it helps me not to procrastinate. So to stay on, to see my progress over time, like as I'm preparing for this talk, you know, preparing the slides. So I recommend using a Trello. I mean, it works for me. So that's one tool. In turn, there's another tool when you're creating your slides itself. You may want to highlight pieces of code. There is a tool from called Syntax Highlighter, where you paste in the code, and then you could see what it is there. You could highlight it with different theme, like Dracula, for example. That's another tool that I recommend. So creating your abstracts, I recommend Grammarly or Hemingway Editor is nice. Like, they have a web UI. You paste in your abstract, and it gives you suggestions. It's another tool. So that those are all tools that I use. Any Madonna, do you use any other tools? Anyone else in the audience use other tools for your talks?
Oh, go ahead, Madonna.
Yeah, I think the ones you've mentioned, because mostly, okay, so one of the other tool that I would like to say that I've used that is pretty good and great, especially for presentations, is Keynote. I find Keynote has like great presentations templates. Because before I used to struggle, like, wow, how are people making, you know, their presentation look so cool? And then I heard it was Keynote. I do also use SpeakerDeck just to upload all my presentations, because it's much easier and it's online. And I do know it's free. I think you might, I don't know which one has like you pay, but SpeakerDeck is good too. SpeakerDeck is good. Like, where I just upload and do all the animations I want and add a different kind of stuff on my talks. Yeah, I think that's what I would say. How about you, Mike?
I have not given an official conference talk yet. I've submitted a couple call for papers, though. So I just organized those in Google Docs, though. Nothing too fancy.
Oh, congrats on your first one, Matt. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
You'll
I wish
fine.
I had these. Wish I had these tips beforehand, you know?
Oh, another. I can't believe I missed sharing. I obviously use Keynote. I personally use Keynote than Google Slides. And it's just a personal preference. Some people. I definitely what Madonna was saying. Can't believe I missed that. I upload your slides to SpeakerDeck and share it out after you in a tweet. You know, that really helps people. I wanted to share one more suggestion. when you're giving talks, and you know, a lot of what I see is that talk you think is a keynote. So if you think it is something that really helps and is, you know, write it in the comments, you know, that you know, that I think this talk I would like to, it would be a good when you submit a talk in Sessionize, for example, you could write notes for the or reviewers. And good notes to write in there are whether you think it's, you know, be a good keynote, or whether you give this talk somewhere else, and how was it received? Well, how will it be different? Will you be adding, revising your content, adding more? And so those are good notes that are helpful for me when I've been reviewing.
Awesome. Great stuff. I think like something that I noticed when I just did this is that when you do open the call for papers link and you go in, like it's very explicit what's there that you need to fill in. So it's really just like your name, you know, who you are, and then the abstract. And then like Mohit was just saying, these notes, and then a couple tags for like the category, whether it's like Compose or Kotlin or testing, stuff like that. So it's a lot less stressful than I originally thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I was wondering if there aren't any questions. Another thing I was wondering to talk about was practicing your talks. That good?
Yeah, I would love to hear about that. So how do you practice your talk? Do you, you know, do it by yourself in front of a mirror? Like, what's the deal?
That's the more challenging part.
Yeah. So giving talks pre-pandemic and during pandemic and post has been very different. So practicing for them. So I usually practice. I try to find at least 5 people. They may be your colleagues. It could be someone in the Android community. And by the way, I want to say, if anyone wants to practice a talk, I'd be happy to be your audience and give you. You want to practice. I practice at least with 5 people. I take their feedback, you know, I always take the person's feedback, you know, and how that helps you to practice. So pre-pandemic it was I would do it in like in person, and I also like when I practice record myself, and you know, in case something goes wrong. So sometimes it might be that you have a bad internet connection, but you could say like, you know, like doing talks remotely, hey, I have a recording, you know, here as a backup. Always, when I practice, you know, I always time myself. Like, you don't want to go over time. That's important. These things for questions. And when you practice, there are certain things that, you know, that I always struggle with. When I talk really, really fast sometimes. Maybe I have been talking fast here. So you want to pace yourself. Something that one advice I got is to always, you know, breathe. When you go into a transition slide, like, you know, take a pause and breathe. And another thing I practice, you know, that I personally struggle with is that when you're giving a talk, you know, you don't look down and give a talk. Look up. And you know, one advice I got is that have a like a broad view of the audience. You know, one of the things that always, you know, pre-pandemic, always practicing when I would give meetup talks is that have a look at the reaction of your audience, and then like adjust and improvise on that, and you know, that really helps. And getting a reaction from your audience, see their, you know, some people they will start looking at their phone and not even paying attention to your talk. So then you know that what for one is that I have had that happen. That's bad. Yeah. So Madonna, to interject. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, I do have a question on that. And I was wondering, when you do that, do you have like, do you bring your speaker notes like on your slides?
Oh, that's a good one. So I personally do not use speaker notes at all. I do, many people other do, you could do that. That helps you to look at what are going to be the talking points. But because I practiced it so much with at least, you know, five people. I know what I'm going to be talking about because I practice it enough that I personally have not needed speaker notes. But I'm not saying they're not useful, but they are useful. If you need them, then, you know, definitely put them.
Thank you. Another question that I had, I was wondering, right? When you talk, when you start, because I feel like that is something that has happened to me before. When you're giving a presentation, how do you know that, let's say, 45 minutes takes, like, let's say, 20 or 30 slides? How does that, does it come naturally? Because I feel like one of this, there was a day when I was giving a presentation and I had, like, 45 slides and it took, like, 20 minutes and I was like, oh, my God. Do I need more?
Oh, yeah. So my presentation at DroidCon SF was about 35 minutes, I think. And but although my number of slides I had was about 200. But 200 slides, I think the number of slides doesn't really mean how long it takes. Because for me, it was, I guess, animations, you know. The number of slides doesn't really always equate to how long it would take. It's usually how much content you have. You know, that's one advice I got. You know, one thing that I struggle with is that when you prepare the slides, you look at them, you like, you know, I should add more content. But you don't want to add more content because the attention span of people of an audience is on average like 20 minutes. So you want it to be not too much content. It's right in enough that covers, makes it engaging for about 30 minutes, and then keep 10 minutes for questions for conference and also like for meetup talks. That's what I work on, and that's not easy. So you're always tempted to add, you want to add more and more content, but it's always good to, you know, keep it concise.
Thank you. I think that's going to be helpful for me too. I think that makes sense. But one thing that I learned is that just to always have extras. And I also want to ask you about one more tip, because I know you've given more talks. And I've wondered, in terms of, let's say, imaging, right? When you have an image, do you talk through like what that image is about and just, like, describe it? How do you go about with images? Because I've seen many talks where people just use images, like an emoji. Right.
I personally do not. So everyone has different styles given talk. I personally have not given a talk where I've had images. I basically had code. But I remember another thing I'll bring up is that the experience you get when you give a talk with someone else is great because who has a different style, and that really helps you to see like a different style and talk. So I remember once I gave a talk with someone who used images a lot, and the part really good is good to have images. You know, first one is that, you know, it wakes people up, it keeps people engaged, and you want to have, you know, a lot of people, you may go on Jiffy or have something that relates to your point. And maybe it's a GIF or something. You know, gets a reaction from the audience. May make someone smile if it's funny. And you want to tell a story around the picture, you know, and because the person, so you want to tell a very engaging story in whenever you show slides with pictures, that's important.
Oh, sorry. I wanted to say thank you very much for sharing that with us. I don't know if Matt has anything else. We are almost wrapping up. And I'm also very grateful to you, Mohit, for taking your time to come talk to us about this stuff, because it's pretty cool. And I know many people definitely, if you've not submitted your first talk, if you want to know how you can submit, please follow Mohit and ask him through his DM. I hope that's okay, Mohit.
Yeah, no problem. If you if anyone wants help reviewing a submission that you may be submitting or your slides or your practice, feel free to DM, happy to help. There are also other people here that can help out, like Matt, Madonna. I know Ahmed has given talks. He, you know, is also, I'm sure, we're a great use resource to get mentorship from. So, yeah.
That is true. Matt, back to you.
All right. Yeah, it looked like Harsh may have had a question.
Yeah, Matt. So how you all overcome the stage fear and you get confident to deliver your talks?
Could you repeat that one more time?
Yeah, so how you all get the confident and overcome the stage fear while you're giving your talk?
Yeah, so about stage fright and how do you overcome that and present in a confident way?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, so I that's what I struggle with. And it's hard. When I start giving my talk, I'm basically shaking. But then, you know, I get these butterflies, but then it smooths out in the middle, you know. You'll always be nervous. I'm always nervous, no matter if it's a remote talk or it's a talk in person. And but it's more, the more talks you give, the more I give about 3 or 4 per month, and now it's that really helped me to build up my confidence. And I give talks because that's something I struggled with, and it's a medium to help me to work on to gain confidence, basically. And you have a fear, you know, something I struggle with, the fear of judgment, you know, because when you give a talk, your people will always judge you. Like, for example, I gave a talk at DroidCon NYC in 2018. And one of my first talk, and something that I always, in that talk, I always use the word, I will say, I had this habit. And then the bad part is someone called it out in the YouTube video, and that was bad. You know, there will always be, you know, people who say bad, be always people who say good. So look at the positives. When a talk is done, you know, always try to do a postmortem and look at what are questions I got, you know, what were the positives that happened, what could I do differently, you know, based on how the talk went next time I make a talk. So I would say, to summarize, you know, the more, you know, giving this Twitter space, I don't think I would have given it about, you know, many years ago, because I would be so scared. I would be scared to put myself out there because of fear of either judgment from someone else, that either you're not worth it, or because something. So it's a constant, you know, battle. You had a just constant battle, you know, put yourself out there and keep doing it, you know.
And not to cut you off, Mohit, I just want to support your point, because that I feel like me hearing you say that, and I've seen you give so many talks and that you still struggle with it. I mean, I'm like, who am I? So this happens to me too. And actually, I think I had, so my first talk was like for Women Who Code. It was just a local meetup. And we had like 45 people in attendance, and I was giving my first ever talk. And I remember freezing in front of people. And then one of my friends, co-organizer, told me, wait, like, just think of it like you're looking at naked people, which was very weird. But after I walked through it, like, for a few more minutes, I started feeling more at ease. And then my stomach relaxed. I really don't know. You're right, Mohit. It's just about that fear of judgment and thinking that people will judge you. One thing that I've learned, though, not to do is to go look at the comments afterwards. Just kind of like lay it low and then look at it later, because you don't want to judge yourself. But also, in the back of my mind, I always tell myself, I'm going to be my own cheerleader. If somebody gave me a bad comment, I'll definitely see how I can improve, but not take it too hard, which might be hard to do, but that's what we need to learn, how to do it. Like, don't take it harder, because some people will like it, some people will not like it. That's life, just like you've said it. So I don't think the fear goes away. I think it just gets better. Because now I've done a couple of like fireside chats or panel discussions. And I don't have that fear anymore. Like, it just disappeared just by itself. But my first one was definitely nerve-wracking. I froze. Like, just,
okay. Yeah. Yeah, so just to add on to you, those are good points. I do struggle still. I mean, but that's human. I remember once I had a talk accepted at DroidCon NYC, and I pulled out because of a fear of judgment on what people. It was on advanced coroutines and had a lot of anxiety, and because of the fear of how my talk would be judged by certain groups of people in the community. So from that experience, I learned that I'm never going to do that again. So it's hard. But I use that as a fuel, basically, because, you know, I use that as a fuel that, you know, I do have a voice and want to be heard, basically.
Also, Matt, we're not trying to scare you for your first talk, Matt.
Oh, it's all right. I've pretty much just accepted it.
And I think you did great.
It's kind of basically like thing that everybody faces this fear, and I'm not the only one who gets nervous I forget my line while speaking with someone else on a group of people. So it's good that everyone are living the same life here.
Yeah, I think a good way of looking at it, and how I'm looking at it, is that going to these conferences or watching these talks, like, the people who are going to see you speak are choosing to do so. And so that can be really empowering, because it's not like people have to be there and you have to prove something. Those people are there to learn from you and to hear what you have to say, whatever it is. So giving the talk to them should, like, at least the way I'm thinking about it, should feel a little more comfortable than if it was presented to, you know, people who might not want to be there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Awesome. I think that's all from us today. So we can start wrapping up. But thank you, Mohit, so much for joining us and giving us all this knowledge. And also for being such a resource for the community, for anyone who needs help practicing or reviews on abstracts or anything like that. That's really, really generous. And I know that you know what you're talking about, and people will definitely benefit if they reach out to you. So thank you so much for being here and being a part of the community and contributing so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Just if anyone needs reviewing their abstract or talks, happy to help. Just DM away. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody, for being here today. We are very appreciative. And stay connected. Please make sure you follow Matt and I for more spaces. And yes, Matt, do you have anything else to say?
No, that's all. I guess just take care of yourself today, especially if you're in the U.S. Got some rough news with the Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade. So, you know, be kind to yourself, be kind to others, and spread good vibes and love.
Good vibes only. Bye, everybody.